coming to you live from our secret underground lair.
This is Gotham Undercover,
a Golden Spiral Media podcast dedicated to the Fox television series Gotham.
This week we discuss a new chapter from the storybook of Gotham's villains and defenders of justice.
Now it's time to join your hosts, Tim Arthur and Ryan Boyles, for
Gotham Undercover.
Hey there, fine citizens of Gotham. I'm Tim.
And I'm Ryan.
And this week, we have the pleasure of joining you for a discussion of the ninth episode of season one, entitled Harvey Dent, Two-Face Himself.
This one was written by Ken Woodruff and directed by Karen Gaviola.
Yep. So before we start out with this particular episode, a little bit of news. Next week, I believe the episode's called Lovecraft, is the fall finale. So it looks like that's going to be probably the last new episode of Gotham in 2014. So yeah, looks like they're taking a holiday typical, break. Right? What's that?
This is the typical break, I guess, but it did kind of sneak up on us.
Yeah, well, there's been a lot of shows that have kind of not had a new episode one week. They'll run a rerun or they won't run an episode. But they've been solid since they've started, every single week with a new episode. And it looks like they're going to finish up the fall with next week and return in early 2015. So some initial short takes on this episode. We'll get to our reviews much later at the tail end of the episode. But this was technically kind of a smooth episode, I thought, from start to finish. There wasn't really anything that kind of jumped out at me as important other than some of the interaction between Bruce and Selina, which we'll get into. What about you, Ryan? What'd you think?
For me, it felt like an old-timey, old-fashioned episode, you know, for a lot of reasons. The new characters, the interplay with Selina, the interplay with Oswald, except for the ending, which I think kind of felt like it was strapped on.
Wow, is that a pun?
I don't know if that's a pun yet. We'll see.
Yeah, but no, you know one thing, though? I got to say, I'm really digging that pair of glasses that Selina has, man. Those are real kind of steampunky. Pretty cool. That's the one thing that I'm
very cool.
Always liking about that character. All right, so we've got a couple of new characters in this particular episode, actually a trio. One of them, the most significant one, as we know from the title of this episode, is Harvey Dent, the Assistant District Attorney of Gotham. And he's introduced to us kind of interacting with a young teen that's committed some crime. We don't know specifically what the crime was, but he gives him a choice. He can either go to jail or run free, walk away. And that's all going to be based upon the flip of Harvey's infamous two-headed coin. So that was kind of cool to see that hat tip to the lore of Harvey Dent right off the bat. What did you think about Harvey's introduction here?
I kind of liked it. I mean, it felt like it was a bit over the top. Mm-hmm. And a couple of things I noticed here was not only the coin, which we all know from the lore is like a two-sided coin, mm-hmm. that he uses for various purposes, but this guy, Nicholas D'Agosto, is that how you say it? Not quite sure,
Nicholas
but this
DeGusto.
Actor, he really, he showed that he mentioned religion for the first time in, I think, this entire series, mm-hmm. which is interesting. He sort of uses that as a motivation with this troubled teen, mm-hmm. to turn over the right leaf. And he really, you know, seems like a bright-eyed do-gooder, almost more so than Gordon, in a way.
Yeah. In the interest of kind of nailing it down as a crime procedural, the villain of the week, if you will, didn't really have a special name. There wasn't like the Balloon Man or anything like specifically about this guy, other than the fact that he was a somebody that was put away from his mental troubles. Ian Hargrove, he basically is an explosives expert who was put away for basically being mentally ill and also liking to build bombs. So those are not two traits that you'd like to have mixed together. So, I didn't know how to feel about this character. There really, it was almost, other than some of the intertwining with the plot that we'll get into, there really wasn't much significance about this guy at all. He didn't really add anything to the story himself.
I've been reading, there was a lot of mixed reaction to Ian. So, you know, he's not necessarily a character from the canon. I think that's okay. But a lot of people had trouble with him being a bomber that had a cause, I guess. So he was a bomber that got put away for killing a couple of people, but it was apparently by accident because he only blows up munitions factories for the good of the people.
So what are you saying? The reaction was kind of a... against the writers for kind of champion writing a part where the motive for bombing was champion, maybe?
I think it's hard for anybody in this day and age to get behind anybody, regardless of your cause, that sort of uses what we would call now terrorist tactics. Blowing up stuff. So it's kind of an odd choice, you know, for this, you know, staff of writers, but we'll get into more of what I think their motivation really was.
Mm-hmm.
So with Dick Lovecraft, this is sort of the third character for this particular episode that gets introduced. I think a lot of people had fun with the name, trying to guess again if it was someone that had significance or was a bit part to give Harvey someone to chase. But another billionaire businessman that's slimy. Seem to be a lot of those in Gotham.
Yeah, that's quite an interesting name too, definitely. All right, so let's dive right in real quick to the main points of this particular episode. We kind of start out with Jim Gordon is actually going back to his apartment to see Barbara, and Kat's with him, and Barbara's not there, and this is where we see the note that Barbara left, and she basically said, you know, I'm not strong enough for you, Jim. I'm going away because I can't be in Gotham anymore at this point in time. So that's kind of where we start out. And, you know, Kat's kind of, Selina's kind of playing around saying, oh, you're having some girl trouble. You know, it's kind of, you know, as a grown man, having a young teen girl kind of chide at you is probably pretty insulting to Jim.
I don't think he cares for Kat at all at this point, because she's sort of promised things, not really followed through. She's escaped at least twice, maybe three times at this point. So he's looking to put her in a safe house.
Yeah. So this is where he drops the bomb on her and basically says, you're going to Wayne Manor, girl. And she's like saying, basically, what you talking about, Willis? Yeah, and
was this a good choice for Gordon, you think?
I think so.
Do you think it was a convenient plot device to put the two kids together?
I think it was a little bit of both. He wanted her out of his hair, right? And I think it did make, you know, and obviously, you know, as we'll get into later, the two have a little bit of chemistry together. So I think it was a good choice. But then we meet Ian Hargrove. He's on his way out of... the penitentiary system being transported to, I believe, a mental facility for treatment, something like that. And there is a plot to take him. And en route to this other facility, I forgot the guy's name. What's the Russian guy's name?
Gregor.
Yeah, this guy Gregor. Basically, Fish, we'll cut right to it, but Fish put together a plot where these guys were going to intercept this bomber, and there's kind of a plan that was hatched to get to Falcone and harm him. So that was interesting.
Here's one thing I wondered here, though. It looked they said that this Ian bomber guy had not only, you know, bombed these munitions factories and whatnot, but he's escaped several times by sort of blowing up stuff or using explosives in weird ways, and it looked like he was about to attempt his own escape in the vehicle.
What did he have in his hand?
It looked like origami to me.
I thought it was like a guard was definitely
thrown off by it. But they said that he was sort of, the backstory was being told by the guard that was before he got on the truck, the transport truck, to leave Blackgate. You know, the guard was telling the rookie officer there to, you know, don't touch him,
don't take anything past from
him. Don't
get
near him, because he's able to fashion explosives from household items or from random things. You know, And he's a flight risk. He's an escape artist. And it looked like he was about to do that before the Russians intercepted the truck and actually stole him, snatched him away.
Yep. And in other mob news, we see that Oswald, basically being Oswald and kind of snooping around trying to get the dirt on everybody, visits Liza's apartment and discovers that she also shares a perfume that Fish is also a fan of. So he's kind of putting two and two together, coming up with some more information on that he learned last week in terms of the fact that that Liza is definitely kind of spying on Falcone, is trying to infiltrate Falcone. And he's on to Liza, and he pays her a visit later on in the episode, and interestingly enough is going around sniffing her clothes. So
that kind of, I mean, it was very much in Oswald's character, but a couple things didn't ring true for me. I mean, he goes and confronts Fish again in her club to verify that the lilac perfume is the same, which to me it's too convenient in a way, or too obvious.
Holy fruit salad.
I don't know. What did you think? Because he essentially went and confronted Fish for no good reason. Fish hates him. She wants to stick a knife in him. And he shows up, sniffs her neck, and says, "Good day to you," you know, and kind of dances away.
This wasn't a really strong Penguin episode. He's played such a prominent part in all of the episodes, literally, up to this point. And this seems kind of like he was taking a little bit of a back seat. And that's kind of what, you know.
It seems to me if Liza was already very nervous about, you know, infiltrating Falcone's office and stealing the ledger and doing all that kind of stuff, and wanted to be, you know, she kind of thinks a target's on her back, you know, and her time is limited. So you would think they would be a little bit more careful with obvious links between each other.
Well, here's the thing that I didn't get, though, about Liza. We all know she's a tough gal, you know, as she had to duke it out with that other girl to kind of win Fish's affection in an earlier episode this season. I'm surprised she just didn't beat the holy hell out of Penguin and be like, "Look, you ain't going to call her, or you're not going to call Falcone," you know, and just slap the phone out of his hand and kick his butt, you know? I mean,
she's a tough girl. That would take care of Fish's problem number one.
Just beat down this guy, you know? He always seems to elude physical harm, I guess, at this point. So,
well, and he gets an advantage kind of in his weaselly way. And so he essentially tells her that now, you know, if in exchange for not outing her to Falcone, she's going to spy for him, which I just don't think, I don't see how she follows through with that, really. Because she knows. She's worthless to everybody at this point.
That's the thing about the Penguin. He gets everybody to play two. He is always playing two sides of the fence with everybody. He's your best friend and your worst enemy. But he also has the ability to get people, everybody that he interacts with, to flip. We saw that with, with the guys in a couple episodes again, when, you know, he basically was like, "Oh, I'm going to pay you more money." So, he gets people to flip on their employer, all sorts of stuff. Is he that cunning of a, you know, personality that's possible? Apparently, in the world of Gotham, you know, this seedy guy everybody just kind of bows to and bids his will. But I'm hoping that at some point in time, he gets a little dose of what's coming to him. I'm not sure if that's going to happen, but
I think it's all about the leverage that he thinks he has over people, which sometimes that works. Yeah. I mean, it's a fear thing. Just think, if Liza, you're right, if Liza is as strong of a person, or, you know, both in willpower and just, you know, physically, it seems like she would not put up with this, or you know, she would try to make her exit at this point.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit more about the good guys. Harvey Dent, now, we all know he's the assistant DA, and he likes to champion justice, or come across that he's doing well for Gotham in terms of pursuing justice for those that need it. And also, he likes to gamble, as we know. He's got the two-headed coin, and he's always flipping that thing. And surprisingly, though, in this particular episode, we already are getting a taste of his rage, of what he's possible of in terms of rage. when he kind of he talks about the fact that he's going to bring Dick Lovecraft in, and basically whether or not there's evidence, he's going to pin the Wayne murders on Dick Lovecraft, even though there's no evidence pointing, you know, no, he basically falsifies the story and says, hey, we've got eyewitnesses linking you to the Wayne murders. And, you know, obviously this is a bunch of crap, but still, you know, he goes forward with this plan and he basically says, you know, blows up at Lovecraft and gets right in his face and starts screaming at him. And I was like, wow, that's pretty intense.
I still liked this sort of showing the, it's kind of like too good to be true. Mm-hmm. Harvey Dent, you know, he's very enthusiastic, but overly so, a little bit too much zeal. And then we get that little bit of rage when he actually does get in the room with Lovecraft, and confronts him with the threat of a eyewitness. Here's my problem with it though. It's not with Harvey Dent. It's really with Gordon. I could not understand why Gordon would go along with this. With all the other things that have blown up in his face recently, mm-hmm. including his home life, it seems like, you know, he would really just want to protect Kat at all costs and not create any scenario that would sort of jeopardize that. That's the only card Gordon has to play. So I just wouldn't trust anybody with that.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Trust is not,
really, he's like, oh, who's Lovecraft? You know, why would we care about him? And it didn't seem like, why would Gordon go along with implicating Lovecraft when, you know, there's really no, Dent pretty much says there's no evidence other than he didn't like Wayne, but a lot of people didn't like Wayne.
Well, he didn't agree with it. He's like, you know, you're not, he basically, I wouldn't say he went along with Harvey doing that. You know, he was kind of like, yeah, you know, whatever, whatever you think you can do, but. He was pretty adamant about the fact that,
Well, I guess as long as Kat is anonymous and hidden away safely.
Yep. So Ed Nygma, gotta love this guy. I really liked him in this episode because he was a couple of the scenes that everything that he does is entertaining. He basically grills. He goes, I like video games. Do you like video games? and then he was kind of, while he was experimenting with some explosives or some chemicals, was listening to like a radio call-in show and about physics and the periodic table and whatnot. And he knew all the answers. And that was just entertaining. I mean, I liked his personality. And I'm eagerly waiting for when he kind of snaps and turns toward the dark side.
Yeah, me too. And you know what? For all the good things he's been doing, all the help he gives the intrepid, you know, homicide team every week, mm-hmm. he actually got a little bit of a shout out this week by Bullock. Not much, but there was a little bit of a thanks, you know, not really high five, but, you know, he's been getting no respect from anybody, which, you know, like we said last week, makes you wonder when he's going to snap.
Yeah, not much action from Bullock this week, you know.
No sandwiches. He does get a little bit of a shootout with the bad guys at the end of the episode. Yeah, but yeah, I think it's almost like they're dialing Bullock back a little bit. Other than the backstory episode that we had, it really feels like they're dialing him back quite a bit.
Right, so let's talk about the man, the myth, the legend, Dick Lovecraft.
The man.
Yep, so yeah. He's slimy, man. He looks slimy and acts slimy.
Yeah, you know what? I wonder if, you know, I think he was kind of a means to an end, ultimately, because, you know, again, cutting to the chase, the way that this episode felt disjointed, but it kind of came together in the end, so... The bomber ends up being a justification for the mayor to flip the switch on the master plan to reopen Arkham as the mental institution.
Mm-hmm. Well, we also know that this guy, Dick Lovecraft, had a grudge with Thomas Wayne, though.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the angle that Harvey's going.
You know, the Wayne legacy of creating an actual state-of-the-art care facility for mentally ill folks is really, really being twisted here with Arkham. You know, mm-hmm. Arkham should be torn down. You know, it's this. You know, Gordon said it. It's this 20-year-old, you know, death trap that, you know, there's nobody in their right mind would think that these people, these mentally ill folks are actually going to get help there.
Well, it's kind of insignificant as this episode kind of seems on some levels, though. We have to think, though, that this character must have at least some significance, at least in a minor arc, because they did name the next episode after him. So, you know, one can deduce that next episode there's some significance with his character, possibly.
Yeah. Well, I think it seems like a lot of signs are pointing towards just, you know, Arkham playing this big part in the storyline. So it looks like Arkham is going to become a bigger center of, you know, the Gotham universe than we thought it would to begin with.
Right. So now that we talked about Mr. Lovecraft, let's talk about what I thought was actually probably the best part of this episode. And that was really, you know, the two kids, Bruce and Selina, getting to know each other while she was brought to Wayne Manor. And I think she reluctantly went there. She's, you know, she's a kid on the street. You know, she's not comfortable living within the confines of rules. And, you know, she, having said that, the thing that I picked up on right away was that, you know, she woke up and she missed breakfast, and breakfast is, it's everything's structured, you know, and it's not like she can just, you know, eat whatever she wants, even though she was told that there's food, but she's not going to be waited on, you know, outside the confines of what the schedule is. So, but seeing these two even introduce themselves and kind of shake hands and tell each other their names was kind of a great thing to see. The two kids kind of, I really enjoyed the scenes together because there was kind of a comfort level there, I think, in the acting. You know, they're two, literally kind of two peers. You're not seeing Selina interacting with an actor that's, you know, 20 years her senior, you know, Cameron and Ben. It was great to see the two kids have a chemistry. And going back to the first episode, I remember the actor that plays Bruce. I wasn't all that impressed with him initially, but he is an actor, or in terms of the writing of the show, the dialogue, it's gotten much better, I think, in terms of his character. He's kind of grown into the part, I think. And seeing these two kind of interact and talk like kids, although, you know, some people have pointed out that the way she talked was kind of old-timey feel, not necessarily the way that kids would talk these days. It was kind of good to see.
Yeah. I think there's definitely chemistry there. It almost felt like it was two adults staring at each other when they first sort of introduced each other formally. And they do a handshake, which is kind of awkward, but at the same time, it kind of shows that they're both, in a way, filling each other out. But they look like two adults standing there when they do that.
Mm-hmm.
And there is this connection. I mean, they're obviously from two different universes, but they're both curious about Bidden. I want to say good and evil, right? Because you've got Bruce, who's kind of like the sheltered, you know, pragmatic do-gooder. You know, he's had the tragedy happen to him, but at the same time, we get a bit more of Kat's backstory, Selina's backstory, because Bruce starts asking about her mother, her parents, and we can't tell if she's really making up the story or.
Oh, sure, she is. She's concocting a yarn.
She is, but she says, "I'm not an orphan." She doesn't want anybody to feel sorry for her. She's got her shields up.
Well, she's putting together, you know, a concocted story about her mom and show business, and she's doing this and that. She's going to come back for her someday. Yeah, we all know that's not going to happen, but still, I think she's kind of making up the story to kind of make herself look better and feel better at the same time. Because she's probably not too proud of, I don't think we've really heard much about her true backstory at this point. Maybe we will, which would be interesting.
But some of the big questions here are, you know, is Kat going to stick around? She almost tries to escape again, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I think she ends up making a bond with Bruce a little bit that maybe is the start of something. But it makes you wonder, like, where does their relationship go with from here? Because we know what happens as an adult. So I don't know.
Let's talk about the dialogue a little bit though. And this is kind of, I don't know if I liked the fact that it was awkward or it didn't seem to fit, but maybe we didn't see all of the conversations they had. Maybe there's a lot more dialogue that kind of went on behind the scenes of their interactions together. But one of the first kind of interchanges they have in kind of getting to know each other is Kat basically asks Bruce, have you ever kissed a girl? It's like, well, okay, so two teens that, not even teens, I think she's a teen and is a couple years older than Bruce, but she basically asks him that, and that doesn't seem like the type of thing that you would ask somebody right away. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's, maybe kids, you know, maybe that is the case, but.
I think that's another defense mechanism for her. She's mm-hmm. taking control and kind of being the one to, she's in a way taunting him a little bit, mm-hmm. you know, cause he's putting forth this image of like, he's training his willpower, and it is kind of strange how he, you know, Bruce jumps in the pool to test his ability to, he's fully clothed, mm-hmm. you know, so he's kind of an odd kid in a way, which makes Kat, I think, curious about him, but at the same time, she just doesn't want to let her shields down. So I think that's a way of almost, you know, kind of getting the upper hand on him, because she knows he's probably never been in the room with a girl by himself right. before. You
so,
know what I mean?
So she's trying, you know, as we see through this episode, she's trying to get Bruce to kiss her. Now, let me ask you this. From your perspective, is she trying to get Bruce to kiss her to kind of break his willpower or kind of break him out of that? Or do you think that she just wants to kiss the kid? What do you honestly think?
I think it's honestly about the willpower and taunting him, because he's putting forth this image of, I'm in training and I'm becoming a detective. And I'm, you know, he's putting forth this image of like, he's trying to, you know, figure out how to become this, you know, almost like a warrior for Gotham, right? And she's like, oh no, you don't know anything about it because you haven't been on the streets like me.
But so there, you know. I don't know. When she asked him the first time if he ever kissed a girl, this was before the whole, I'm trying to build up my willpower, and that whole conversation they had at the pool, that was before that. So I personally think that she's kind of smitten with the kid.
But I still say she's just curious because A, she saw the tragedy play out. Mm-hmm. She saw the murder firsthand. She was there, and she's been spying on him before mm-hmm. this. Mm-hmm. So she's seen some of his odd behaviors, you know, about, you know, some of the weird things that he's testing. You know. So I think, you know, she's getting a little bit closer to him, trying to figure out what makes him tick. But I don't think she knows how to make friends. So yeah. she's, you know, she's just trying to be, you know, she's trying to push his buttons.
And then later on in the episode, one of the final sequences of this particular episode, she basically throws a bagel at him out of thin air. It was actually kind of funny. She just pelts him with a bagel, and he's like, what the heck did you do that for?
And, typical girl. And then, you know what? Yeah. It is, you know, they always have the saying that, you know, the person that you, you know, punch in the arm or the person that you hit the most when you're in fifth grade, that's the person you like.
Mm-hmm. Or you, the one that you pick on the most. Yeah.
Right. And so maybe you're right. Maybe she does have a thing for him, but she gives him the final taunt, which is, you know, if you're such a badass, then if you can hit me with a bagel, then I'll let you kiss me.
Yeah.
And then the worst bagel fight ever ensues, where he never hits her once in 50 tries.
Yeah. And then Alfred comes in and puts that plan to rest. You know,
well, you know, Alfred, this was the thing. Alfred had been the grumpy house dad and had been begging Gordon to come, you know, remove this little street urchin from the house or whatever. But that is the moment when she won him over.
Yeah.
Because he smiled. He knew that Bruce was acting like a kid again, or for the first time ever, maybe. And that's like not a bad thing at this point.
Yeah. And pretty much with every Gotham episode, we get the one more thing, and the one more thing is Barbara once again. Poor Jim Gordon, you know, he's trying real hard. He's trying. He even calls and says, Barbara, come back, baby, I love you. Leaves her a message, you know, and all, you know, the voiceover on this, you know, they're showing Barbara lying in a bed, and she appears to be by herself, just kind of, you know, all sultry and sulky, all by herself. And then we see
typical
a hand.
Barbara.
Yeah, and then we see a hand reach over Barbara's shoulder, followed by a quite an involved kiss from one Renee Montoya.
Wow. So did you see this? I don't think anybody saw this coming. I don't know. We've been talking about how confused Barbara is with Montoya trying to not steal her away, but basically steer her clear of her man.
I guess the question is, when, you know, she was pretty vocal in telling Bruce, look, you know, that's over. I don't want anything to do with her. But was it the prodding of Montoya saying, you know, trying to pull her away from Jim? Or was it just, you know, kind of, I don't want to deal with all this danger that Jim's dealing with that kind of pushed her back? What do you think?
I have no idea. I think Barbara's on something, straight up. I think she and Montoya are still taking the same wacky pills, so now they deserve each other, maybe. I don't know.
Does she own any pants?
I don't think. This is another... I'm going to say she's not wearing pants in this episode.
Well, I think Montoya's probably the one wearing the pants.
Well, yeah, but... Yeah. So is this Montoya's master plan played out, you know, from the get-go? Was this the ultimate, you know, was she gunning to get back in the driver's seat here, so to speak?
Does that have anything to do with the fact that maybe she was driving the whole interaction with her and Alan to kind of approach Bruce and say, hey, you know, we're going to help you out? Or not Bruce, but Jim, say, hey, we're going to help you out, and let's work with Bruce and Alfred here, and... Is that part of the whole plan, or was she, you know, was she disingenuous in her efforts and offerings to help the Waynes?
Well, that is the one thing that doesn't really add up here. And there's a lot of things that sort of seem almost out of sync in this episode, you know. And that's one of them, because we had the big, what could have been the fall finale sort of
last week.
You know, that whole arc with Penguin's umbrella, and with, you know, Gordon playing his trump card, trying to take Falcone in and all that stuff. It seemed like that was like kind of like the crescendo.
Was this one of the added episodes, do you think, once they signed on for an extended?
I just feel like if Montoya and Alan were really kind of the only ones that Gordon could trust now, maybe Bullock. But I mean, it shows that maybe Montoya doesn't have the scruples that we, you know, she proclaims that she does, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So the hashtag I've been noticing, before we get into reading tweets, I've been seeing the Gatham hashtag. So I don't know if those people are cheering about this episode or what, but we'll see.
Hmm. All right. One of our favorite segments is the hashtags. So what we do is we take the hashtag Gotham and combine that hashtag with another phrase, another name, or something from the episode. And the first one that we're going to do this week, and we're going to do this live right here as we record, is hashtag Gotham and Lovecraft. And let's see if we come up with anything here, because typically we find something that is pretty hilarious. All right, let's see here. Anything funny with, is Dick Lovecraft the person responsible for the Viper and Venom? Is that who Molly Mathis was talking to at the end of Viper? Yeah, nothing really funny about that.
I don't know. Most of these are just either people, I'm not calling out anyone in particular yet, but like Joe Masuri, he says, am I the only one that laughed at the name Dick Love? You know, a lot of people just goofing on the name, not really making the connection that some people tried to make, which was a connection with H.P. Lovecraft and how that, you know, somehow would have a tie with Arkham itself being like a dungeon or a pit of misery or what have you, right?
Well, there is the one good tweet from at Furious D Show that says, Dick Lovecraft was my name during my days as an actor in films I really can't talk about. Hashtag Gotham.
I like that one. Oh, man.
So let's move along and look for another hashtag combination. Let's take the word bagels. So let's see what happens when we take hashtag Gotham and bagels. What do we get here?
You got the real coach that says, can we talk about baby Bruce and baby Michelle Pfeiffer chucking bagels at each other? Aww. I think we all did a collective awe when that scene played out.
Well, actually, I really like this one. This is at Harold Saxon GCPD. Now we know how Batman learned to throw batarangs, throwing bagels at Selina Kyle when they were kids. Hashtag Gotham. Not bad.
I like it. He really wants to kiss her.
Yeah. You think so? He's
throwing them bagels back to back. You know what? He was working hard for that.
Yeah. All right. So let's take hashtag Gotham and the word bomb, because we know that Ian was a bomber in this episode. So what do we get here? We get anything funny here?
You know what? My favorite one right off the bat here is from Samantha Silverstream. It's at Cheshire Snoop. She says, "Can we all just take a moment to appreciate that the bomb was playing the final countdown?"
It's kind of along the lines of what, and this actually has the hashtag Gatham in it as well. It's from Elizabeth DV. This says, hashtag Gotham, hashtag Gatham. It's never good when you hear the final countdown in the presence of a bomb suspect.
Yeah. You know what? I think we're going to have a new section of our website or something where people can download all these awesome MIDI ringtones, because I think they're going to make a comeback due to Gotham.
No doubt. Let's head into our our leads and clues section, our wrap-up questions for the episode. And this is what we felt were kind of some burning questions that we have from this episode. First of all, you know, we know Bruce is a sheltered kid. He's comes from privilege. Is he into Selena? What do you think? We'd love to hear your comments and ponderings about that.
We also want to flip that around and really wonder if Selena is into Bruce or if she's just playing games like she does with Gordon and every other character on the show.
Yeah. And surprisingly, though, now that you know, Barbara's taken off on Gordon, is Gordon into Captain Essen? Is there something there? We want to know.
I feel like he's spending the most time with her, and there's definitely, I want to say, there's more chemistry with she and the young detective than anyone else at this point.
Yeah.
So here's one, and this is going back to hashtag Gatham, but is Barbara into anyone? I mean, I don't know if Barbara's just into herself.
I think Barbara's into
what do
Barbara.
You think, Gotham, yeah. Gothamites?
Yeah, let us know. And here's kind of a really pressing question. We mentioned that Oswald kind of plays the fence all over the place, but our last question is, will Oswald share Liza's secret with Falcone, or will he keep his mouth shut? What do you think? Let us know.
I think this is the big one.
Yep. So our rating for this episode, you know, wasn't the best, kind of a middling episode in my opinion. And I gave this 7 penguin sniffs out of 10.
Nice. You know what? I am in the same boat as you, and I think all the parts didn't really add up for me. So there were good bits here and there. I liked the introduction of Harvey, but it'll be weird to see where they go with him. So the jury's out. Blah, blah, blah. And I'm going to give it 6 bagel rings out of 10.
Bagel rings. Yeah. You know what?
That's a word.
It's a weapon that you can buy at your local grocer.
Weapon of choice for young
vigilantes.
Well,
you know, you can buy those frozen Lenders bagels that are kind of crappy. And they would,
yeah,
you know, they'd
that,
be
that
more
would
damaging.
Probably do some damage.
Yeah, more damaging when you throw them. And is that going to take off as kind of a sport like shooting at the range, you know? Chucking bagels.
Perhaps we should invent a new sport where we fashion bagels into little bat symbols and smear, you know, some something on them to make them stick to the target.
Well, mustard's yellow. We could throw mustard-covered bagels, you know.
There you go.
Who knows?
It could be a thing.
Yeah, but, you know, this episode, not, you know, I gave it 7. And the reason I gave it 7, maybe not a little bit lower, was because, you know what, there was really nothing wrong with this episode. It just didn't lead, you know, there was nothing that was like, other than, I mean, I guess, was I shocked that Barbara ended up with Montoya at the end of the episode? Yeah, a little bit, but did I care? You know, did it really press into me? Not really, you know, like I said, sort of the backbone of what we've seen so far, both really kind of breakout performances by, Donal Logue and Robin Lord Taylor as Bullock and Penguin, that was kind of dialed back in this episode. You know, there were all these little things going on, and it was a whole lot of little things, I thought. But I really did enjoy the whole Bruce and Selena interaction.
Yeah, it just seems like they're focusing. I don't know. Like you said, maybe this was one of those in-between episodes, but they didn't really focus on the characters that we really are interested in. I mean, I think a lot of people either don't care about Barbara or actually annoyed by her. So that's, I don't know if that revelation did anything for the series.
All right, so let me get your feel on this, as well as reaching out to our audience, our listeners. Let us know what you think about this. I want to know if you think the fall finale is literally going to send us out with a bang and really kind of desire, that we get to a point where we can't wait till Gotham comes back in 2014 or 2015 next year, because they really leave us with something real huge next week. Do you think next week's going to be a huge episode, or do you think it's going to be middling? What's your opinion on that?
Huge. I don't know. The one thing that we didn't really touch on here, but the title of each episode has been usually the sort of character that gets introduced. Mm-hmm. And so with the name Lovecraft for the next episode, it kind of makes you wonder, is it all about Gotham sort of going down the drain with Arkham or what? I don't know what's going to happen, but we'll see. Big bangs are always a possibility.
Yep. Well, you got to leave us with something until next year, something memorable,
Leave us wanting more, which for me is more Bullock and more Enigma. Maybe they can go out and fight crime together.
Yeah, that's a great idea. But that's going to wrap it up for our investigation this week, folks. Before we head back out into the streets of Gotham, we're asking you to share any leads to solving our weekly investigation. Let us know what you thought about Harvey Dent in this particular episode. What do you think is going to happen in the next episode? You can leave us a message at 304-837-2278 or visit us online at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback.
Can Montoya and Barbara get a marriage license in the city of Gotham? For the answer to this question and more, tune in next week.
Same Gotham time, same Gotham channel.